Welcome back to the Kill Shot. We're talking UFC Vegas 91, Nicolau versus Perez, and we're focusing on fantasy scoring, DraftKings lineups, all that good stuff. With me, as always, to break it down, we got Sniper, we got Monk, we got a card to talk about. So let's get into it. We're just talking about how it's hard to get excited for any card after after UFC 300. Wow. But money's money.
Money finished second. Yep. Finished second in the $5. It was a good night.
I'm pretty confident that you and I tied for a second in the $5.
We did. I posted it everywhere. UFC 300 was a good. We were pretty spot on, and we didn't have last week's for me to victory lap all my shit. But just know we crushed.
Yeah, it was a lot of great call. I think there was one underdog that really you needed that we weren't on, but like a lot of the underdogs that we were on, my kill shot comes through. I had bets. By the way, the bets were crazy also. I bet, I think, four of the underdogs, three out of the four came through. It was awesome.
Yeah. That's going to really be a good night.
Yeah, and we're going to do that too, and we're going to talk a little bit of bets as well for this card. We're going to cover it all, but most important, which fights are going to score well. That is our focus. Then hopefully who's going to win those fights, and we'll help you craft some awesome DraftKings lineups as always. So let's get it started with the first fight of the night, guys, and it is Machachete taking on Gabriel Mowgli Benitez, with Machachete coming in as a -230 favorite, with Benitez +200 in this one. And the fight ends inside the distance is a solid -210. Monk, we have a long history of Mowgli Benitez in the UFC. Good leg kicks, right? How do you see this one going down from a scoring point of view?
Well, Benitez, I mean, Machachete's, it's tough with Machachete. He's won one fight against Steve Garcia, no longer in the UFC, then got, you know, a bunch of points scored on him, like 96 against Rafa, don't call me Hafa Garcia, and then Slava Claus finished him in the second round. So I don't know how much I really trust Machachete, especially at this price. That's my big question mark here. Automatically makes me look at Mowgli Benitez. Not good that the last two wins he has is against Charlie Ontiveros and Justin Jaynes. So that's a big
competition, though.
That's a big, it is
competition. Much better competition than Machachete.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose it's still a red flag for me. But the guy he's lost to, Jim Miller, David Onama, Billy Q, I mean, those are also pretty good names. So honestly, I'm looking at the dog, 7,400. I know there's a 10-year age gap, but I just don't trust Machachete, and I like some guys a little bit more around his salary. What are we looking? He's only got five out of nine finishes, so I'm not necessarily thinking around, you know, 1 minute KO. So I'm willing to take a dog shot here.
This fight bugs the shit out of me, and I'll tell you why. Because I too do not trust Machachete, and to me, this is Gabriel Benitez is the exact type of guy who gives him trouble. And this is the type of guy Mowgli Benitez beats in his career, being around forever. So in my mind, when I watch the tape, I think Benitez is good enough to keep this on the feet, strike, and win a decision. And because he's cheap, is life worth. And that's my pick. Why I hate this fight is then I go to the odds, and it's -250 to end inside the distance. I got Gabriel Benitez, who's over 40 years old at this point.
He's actually not.
Is he?
Shockingly, I was gonna mention this. You're gonna be shocked.
He feels like he's 41. I thought he was 41. I really thought he was 41. So either way, you know what? He's fight old. Regardless, he's fight old, he's being finished recently. And Machachete finishes people. It's one of those where I feel like my ultimate conclusion is that I'm going to go with my read on the fight, and that it's Gabriel Benitez is the pick. But I actually, even though he's more expensive, think Machachete is in his wins. He's more likely to end up on the optimal regardless. I think it's a close fight, so the odds value is probably on Benitez, but in terms of DraftKings optimal lineup potential, I have to go with Machachete. So break that down for what you want. And to be clear, I'm not flip-flopping. I just think my pick, Benitez, odds bet value, DraftKings, I want 110 points. I'll take my shares of Machachete and just probably play field weight there and move on.
Yeah, obviously it has a nice inside the distance prop. I do think it's noteworthy. Neither of these guys are really going for takedowns at all. So while right. You would think Mowgli should do it, but he's probably not going to. Terrible takedown defense for both of these fighters. but there's no real grappling expectation in this fight. And if you just look at the strikes per minute, Machete, not exactly a high volume guy so far in his four fight UFC career. So those are things that are a little sketchy. I think Machete needs a first round finish. Mowgli looked like shit against Jim Miller in his last fight. I think that's noteworthy. But if I hadn't seen that last fight with Benitez really just looking terrible against Miller, I would have been all over Benitez here as well. I think that's caused the odds to skew the way that they have, because effectively Machete's beaten no one ever. And Benitez has some wins that are against not terrible opponents in the UFC, in a long UFC career with some wins. So,
Jim Miller just looked like absolute, I mean, just got the brakes beat off him.
Yeah, there we go. So let's move on to the next fight, which I think is going to be sneaky for DraftKings. I want to hear what Monk has to say about this one. Ivana Petrovic taking on Na Liang. Petrovic is the favorite in this fight. She is -550. That is quite a heavy favorite for some newbie woman who's never beaten anybody in anything, but she's that because she's taking on Na Liang, who is basically the Trevor Peak of women's MMA, just comes out like a lunatic, goes nuts, and then just actually Trevor Peak doesn't really gas. She gasses.
Nah, definitely. If you want to watch tape on Na Liang, go to your local Denny's at 2:30 and just wait for a fight.
Yeah, she just looks like a girl fight, right? Look up Steve Inman's videos on Twitter. That is a pro tip for anybody out there, by the way. Look up Steve Inman. He's great. And I hope he announces a Na Liang fight at some point in the future. But this one carries a -350 inside the distance, bro. Ladies MMA, Monk. -350. I expect not just violence, but I expect fantasy scoring bonanza in this fight. One way or the other. Monk, you're chuckling like you know something. What do you
mean? This is just so funny to me, dude. If you know me and you know who I do content with, Brady, DFS by the numbers, just has the video with Liang Na.
Yeah.
So fantastic.
Patty Pimblett wig.
Yeah, no, that's officially a Na Liang wig that he then used for a Patty Pimblett wig. But so it's just funny. This fight is like ultimate meme fight 65, you know what I mean? It's the people's champ or the people's main event, I should say. Women's flyweights obviously score pretty well compared to what most people are rostering them. 9,400 is a lot. -550 is why I was laughing, because this is a women's fight with -550. But, dude, there could really be value on that -350 ITD line. Na Liang, I mean, what are we doing? 17 of her 19 wins have been inside the distance. 6 of her 7 losses inside the distance as well.
Beating up people in a Denny's. I fucking hate
that. Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, so I think 2 or 3 of her fights out of 26 have gone to decision. That's it. Meanwhile, Petrovic, only 7 fights, so she can't be trusted. Twice she's gone to decision, 5 finishes. I mean, Na Liang is about to be the first woman basically finished in the first 4 UFC fights, I think, in history. I'm not sure. I know there's women with 4 losses, but not 4 finish losses in the UFC. I mean, Carnalosi, Gomez Juarez, JJ Aldrich. Dude, I mean, I guess Na Liang is a decent punt because she has about 2 minutes of cardio and she throws crazy punches that could land on Petrovic, but this is likely a Petrovic like finish, probably around like the 3:30 mark of the first round. If we're if Na Liang's lucky, this gets to like 6 or 7 minutes. But yeah, I think Price Picks had this at like 9 or 10 minutes for the under, and I'm going under there. I think this is a finish. A lot of people are probably going to be on this one because it's like a total meme fight, but you probably have to have a part of this, I think. So yeah, give me Petrovic. Probably by finish.
This is where I'm debating getting really cute, because the fact that everybody's on a fucking $9,400 women's flyweight, I can't. I don't know what I'm gonna do yet. Like check in with me, check in on my pulse Saturday morning, because I game theory. Like, it seems like the easiest game theory spot in the world, where like everyone's gonna play her, and I can take Victor Henry for $100 more, who throws harder against a guy who equally gets finished and has no cardio too. Like Petrovic should win. Clearly,
the only issue there is the guy that Henry's fighting. No one lands, like nobody strikes against him. So all these 10 strikes a minute from Henry. Yeah. Meanwhile, Petrovic and Nalian could be a freaking firefight, dude.
It could be, or she could just dance around, stick and move, and then and Nalian gasses out. She stays at range. Like Carnalosi, on the other hand, looking here, only two of her fights have been.
Ivana Pet, she is just as weak of a striker as Nalian. Both of these girls want to grapple. There's not going to be any standing around throwing strikes here. This is grapples. We're grappling.
No, somebody's going to sleep, dude.
Well, this it's going like, to come from a this sub. Is like
face first. You remember Gaethje knockout a couple weeks ago? Yeah, this is one of these picks.
When
this
you
week.
Get when you lose to Luana Carolina
as a minus 180 favorite, by just, the way,
it's just. Meanwhile, you know, Nali Yang's picking up these impressive. Oh, this is how you know fucking Nali Yang's bad. Her wins armbar in WFWA in WF Wars in the Chinese MMA Super League. What am I doing? Am I breaking this shit down for real? This is
now, like, let me make an argument. I will have exposure to Nali Yang on this card.
So will I, by the way. So at that number and this price, yeah, my real issue is how much of Petrovic am I playing? Is she going to be 45% owned? Because I think I'll die on the inside if I have to roster her at 45%.
Let's see how the rest of the breakdown goes, right? Is there another expensive fighter that I need to pay up for? But at this moment, yeah, you got to have both of that. Minus 400 inside the distance, nonstop grappling until it finishes. That's everything you want in a DraftKings fight. What's not to like? Except for the fact that, like I said, I kind of think Nalian could win this thing with an armbar, because who the hell is this? Who the hell is Ivana Petrovic? What is she proving? Right. Where does she even come from? She is from some random European women's MMA league. Hey,
this is Russian Ronda. Show some Aris respect.
FC, like get the hell out of here. We don't. I mean, Aries
I just,
FC?
I can't. This is so wild. I just and Caitlin Souza, we're going to talk about in a little bit, is 200 cheaper. I just watched her snap somebody's knee in fucking half, and I'm going to have to play Ivana Petrovic instead.
Maybe.
What is happening?
Maybe not. Maybe play Nalian. The most important part, maybe, though, and what we try to figure out here is that fight is going to score well. It's going to score well on DraftKings. Again, in case you missed it, you didn't see it when I put it on screen. 5 takedowns per 15, 2 takedowns per 15. Takedown defense, 0 for Nalian. It's 0.
So funny, dude.
This is going to be Ngannou Lewis. I don't know how. I don't know.
No.
You know what?
No.
I want this fight to get canceled. No. I want this fight off the card. I don't like this fight.
I love this.
This is going to be Holloway Gaethje last 10 seconds, baby. Let's go.
I've played Nalian before in DraftKings, and obviously
No.
It's never worked out. But I always get sucked in by her crazy.
Offense. Because you played Trevor Peake a bunch too. Look
yeah, how that's worked. Yeah, I play those type of people. I play those types. Guys, next up, I don't even know that we need to discuss this fight. Lion Top is a massive favorite against a late replacement, Padilla. Lion Top at this point, and Lon Top, if you want to say it
Lon Top. I can never say.
I heard it was Yamez Yon Top, and I'm not kidding.
I mean, I don't know. All I know is he's minus 440. He's 8,200. It's really difficult not to play somebody like that. Under 2.5 rounds is minus 170, meaning even more, you have to play this guy, and we basically get a free square on this card. You get a minus 440 at 8,200 with a minus 170 inside the distance prop, or at least under 2.5 round prop inside the distance will be minus 200. So, Monk, do you have something to add? Sniper, do you have something to add? Play Lon Top.
Free square, like you said, he should be where his odds are. He should be priced at 9,300. And you're getting him at the cheapest favorite right now against a guy who's coming in on super short notice, who a lot of people say is a bum. So I think it's basically a free square.
Add me to those people. He is a bum.
Padilla also, I don't mind this late minute replacement guy if he's like a knockout power guy. He doesn't knock anybody out.
His nickname is Taco, though.
What's that?
His nickname is Taco. Taco cool. Padilla. That's freaking awesome.
That is a cool name.
But
plus 340, last minute replacement.
Right.
There's no reason to mess with him. I'll play Nalian at the same price and get the 5 takedowns. before she gets herself finished. So,
by the way, more than half of Lilientop's wins are by finish.
Yeah, even better, but only half in the regional scene. I don't consider that a finisher.
Well, he's got, you know, he had the Contender Series fight, and then he had his two fights right before that were finishes.
Lionetop.
He went to decision in his DWCS fight and put up 112. That's a damn good number for a decision. A 3-round decision. I'll take that.
Granted, it is the Peruvian regional scene, which is
right. You know
what? I changed my mind. Fuck this.
It's no Wilf Wars, right? You know,
Wilf Wars.
He's out there fighting Humberto Bondanai in the Peruvian regionals. The only like, you know. Look down the list of Mowgli wins. It's the Peruvian regional scene guys coming up. All right. You know what to do. You play Lontop. You start your lineup there. You move on. Yep. Don't bet this. All right. Next up, we've got Ketlin Souza as a -300 favorite, taking on Marnik Mann at +250. Fight goes the distance, -250. So, unfortunately, here we get a fight that's likely to go the distance. You got a very expensive Ketlin Souza here. Monk, is it worth playing Ketlin Souza over Petrovic or any of these other stud pay-up options?
Normally, I'm saying no. And if we're just, you know, wiki capping, as they say, she got subbed by 2 minutes in Karina Silva +185. Now she's a -300 favorite. That's how bad Marnik Mann is, guys. Look, she landed 8 strikes and she got hit with 81. She did absolutely nothing in that fight. Less than 4% control time against someone named Josephine Knudsen. So normally I would say no, I'm not interested in Souza, but listen, like, how many points is Marnik Mann? Is she just going to get beat and beat on for 15 minutes and just give up a ton of points? And in women's fights, non-significant strikes, that counts for us, guys. You need 5 for 1 point in DFS. And if Marnik Mann gets on the ground as she was last time, controlled for 72% of 15 minutes, we're going to see a shitload of strikes. And Souza could end up with 120 points right here out of nowhere. So normally I'm not interested against Marnik Mann. Kind of interested, to be honest. So
I'm slowly poisoning Monk in the year. Podcast together, because Ketlin Souza is my sneaky. I don't think Na Liang Wan and Petrovic is sneaky. I think everybody's going to be on that one.
Agreed.
This is the one I think is sneaky. Ketlin Souza finished in her career, 70% finish rate. Just watched her. They changed that win, her last win, to officially, it wasn't a knee bar, it was a Z-lock, where she fucking is just taking body parts home. I don't think Marnik Mann is good. I don't think anybody's going to be on Ketlin Souza. I'm not telling you to go 50% Ketlin Souza. I'm just telling you she's going to be 10 to 15%, and that's too low. At the numbers, I get it. I'm probably looking at, so if it's +250 and it's inside the distance, can I get like +300 on Ketlin Souza to win inside the distance straight up? Because I'm going to take a strong look at that number.
I'm just going to say this. Marnik Mann, I know for a fact, has no business in the UFC. I don't even understand how this is taking place. But I'm not really sure if Ketlin Souza is all that good either. So she doesn't really have any notable wins or anything to make me think that she's any good. So, is she going for takedowns? Is she a submission specialist? I don't see any submission wins. She seems to be a striker. I don't have anything that tells me she's going to score well. Sniper, you thinking she's going to knock this girl down and just pound on her?
Like, I think she's going to get it to the ground and submit her. Okay. Or ground and pound her.
On her for 15 minutes.
I think she just, I think she gets on top and pounds on her. Probably.
That's fair.
Gonna finish. I think Marnik Mann is really, really bad.
Not being good enough to finish a fight could be good for us in this DFS situation.
Or just do like Max Holloway did and finish in the last second. So you get all the points plus the bonus.
Point to the ground. Get your ass over here, Marnik.
Max Holloway did that even just to put a stamp on. He was already the nuts. Like, he already put up a monster score and he just finished it for the extra bonus. Get the 10.
I can't describe. And this is for, everybody's the same way, but just that feeling. I don't know what else.
That was a great.
There's a fight. Few moments I'll remember when I'm dead, and that's or when I'm about to die, and that's going to be one of them.
You know, people talk about fight of the year. I don't put that in the fight of the year because I didn't think it was competitive. I did think Max dominated that start to finish. So, like, I'm not going to give it a fight of the year, but it was a fun watch.
My God.
All day. A lot of those fights were kind of like that. There were I didn't see so many where they were super competitive. It was really just like an ass-whooping.
It was a moment guard for sure.
Yeah, good moments. Not so much that. Dontell Hayes taking on Kyle Machado.
We need video clips on this show. That's one of the things we have to invest in. Like just quick, like the fact that we're not playing the Dontell Mays humping Josh Parisian face into the famous clip.
Dontell Mays here. Cut him up with Billy Mays.
That is, you know, for him to do that in a fight is pretty fire, though.
Look, he humped someone to death in the octagon, and he ripped John Jones's shoulder right out of its socket, bro. Ended Jones's career.
Might be my single-handedly.
There you go. Dontell Mays, Kyle Machado, pick 'em fight right now with Mays at minus 100, Kyle at minus 115, depending where you look. The fight goes the distance is minus 140. So this one, a little sketchy, mid salaries, unclear that this thing's going to end inside the distance. Monk, scoring wise, how do these guys generally do?
Yikes. Not the best. I mean, Dontell Mays put up a good score against the aforementioned person that was humped to death, Josh Parisian. He put up 124 in that fight, so you must get a bunch of points per thrust. I don't know. Andre Arlovsky, he scored 90, but overall in his career, it's about 94, so nothing that I'm really impressed with. Obviously, that 124 really raises it up, too. So if you take that one out, you know, take out his best and worst, I'm sure it's around 90 or 88. Nothing impressive. Same with Kyle Machado, man. I mean, the Mick Parkin fight, good Lord. You want to talk about boring 15-minute heavyweight fights? That is on the list. So, yeah, I'm not too excited about this one. I tend to think it goes to decision. Obviously, I have to play a little bit of each side because it is, in fact, a low-level heavyweight fight. Anything could happen, but I think it looks a lot like that Parkin fight. I think Machado has a chance. I think either one has a chance at a greasy decision. Not too interested in this. I'm interested to see if you guys should tell me why I should play one of these guys because I'm just not impressed, really.
Yeah, I'm going to play more of the Brazilian guy, Kyle Machado, because I watched Dontell Mays get struck by something called the Hamdi Abdelwahab, whose fucking stomach I couldn't watch from bouncing around the whole fucking, like, he
was on steroids, too.
Yeah, and that is you juiced up, homie. Like,
he'll be back on that.
After you put it in your ass, you have to lift the weight still. Like, what are we doing? Like, not doing it right. And then he got out struck by Sakai. And, like, I think there is more upside in Kyle Machado. If I remember right, the Mick Parkin fight, he got late on in that fight, right?
Yeah, about half the time almost.
Yeah. I don't think that. You know, that's gonna happen here. I mean, if Mays goes for takedowns, you know, sure, I guess. I think it's more likely, and also it's worth noting we could see a low-level heavyweight armbar because Machado's got a couple of those on his record. I think Machado is slightly better, and I can't trust Mays in the feet. It's a fuck this fight kind of situation. I'm not gonna fade it, but this is. And this is as uninterested DFS wise in a heavyweight fight as you could possibly be.
I'm just going to say, yeah, it is noteworthy that Mays got, you know, he went for it and got six takedowns against Josh Parisian. So he can do that. There's no real evidence of him going for takedowns in other fights, but he's definitely able to do that. Both of these guys really low level. If this thing doesn't get finished quick, it is going to be a stinker. For DraftKings purposes, that's the most important thing to me. So I am only going to have exposure to these guys to the percentage that I think they have a shot at some sort of a fast finish, which isn't super high. They are larger fighters. So, you know, when you're talking about fighters in this weight class, yeah, I mean, heavyweight, it's very large fighters. Maybe it's, you know, I actually want to look up the stat. Because we always think that heavyweights knock each other out at a higher percentage than other categories, but I'm not sure it's that different. I think we maybe over target.
I should do.
I think it is. I have in my other sheet, and maybe I'll post this and tag DFS Army or something. But it is the highest amount of.
I've seen it. I've seen the number. It's a lot, but is it crazy different from all others?
I think it's a pretty decent size gap, but I'd have to go back and look.
I should bet $10 in every heavyweight fight to go to decision for the second half of the year and see how it shakes out.
That would be interesting.
You know what I'd be curious of, Monk? Heavyweights in fights that are lined minus money to go the distance. How often that actually does go the distance. In other words, once I think the heavies, they skew to inside the distance. So whenever you see their line goes the distance, I'd be really curious about that scenario where, oh yeah, those guys actually go to the distance at an elevated level. But
it's probably not a big sample size either.
I mean, but we see these, we see enough of them that it is a sample that we could take a look at. Cause I'd wonder about it. It'd be really interesting to know that stat. All right, moving on. Austin Hubbard taking on Michael Figlak. Figlak is the favorite in this one, coming in at minus 180, and Austin Hubbard plus 150. Let's see here. We got a minus 190 fight, goes the distance to this one. So already we are starting out boring with the prediction here. Anything that Figlak or Hubbard do, Monk, that gets you excited about their scoring potential?
Not really. I am excited about the amount of points that actually, no, it's not. I take it. Neither one of these guys allows a ton of points. Hubbard in losses, I mean. Hubbard, what? He got subbed in the second to Hollibaugh. He gave up like 101. I mean, he gave up, I think, what is that, 85 or 90 to Vince Speech. It's just nothing. It's nothing that's too great. Nothing that's going to, you know, put you, you know, in the nuts lineup for sure. Meanwhile, Figlak has been a long time since he fought. Looks like September of 22 against Ferris Ziem. That's not the world's best loss, but it's not the world's worst loss either. Ziem recently come back and surprised a lot of people against whoever he fought recently. I can't remember off the top of my head. He did take down Figlak a couple of times. He's got a different takedown game than Austin Hubbard does. He's more of a body lock guy, while Austin Hubbard more of a conventional, power double or single wrestler. I'm just unimpressed with Austin Hubbard at every turn. Again, like we mentioned, whoever that beat Justin James and Charlie Ontiveros, Hubbard's beat Dakota Bush and Max Roskopf in his last five fights. That's it. So I don't know, man. I'm leaning Figlak, but 8,400 and 7,800. I think that's probably cheap for what we could see with Figlak, and I think that's probably a little too much for what we could see with Hubbard, even in a win. I mean, what are you going to get, 90 points at 7,800? That's not really ideal. So I'll lean Figlak, but I have no confidence in this one.
Sniper, you're a big watcher of The Ultimate Fighter. What did you think of Hubbard on that show?
You know, that was the veteran versus rookie season where the veteran just butt-fucked the rookies.
Yeah.
Because there are levels to this. And a few of those guys could. Guys like Timur Valiyev, who shouldn't have been cut. Guys like Roosevelt Roberts, who not a great fighter, but I think a low level UFC guy. Like, not what that show was for. It was a good gimmick, good try, whatever. Figlak, I didn't think he was very good. And frankly, I like picking on the Cage Warrior guys. A few guys coming over from Cage Warriors are right. I like picking on them in general. In general, sorry, I still think Paddy Pimblett's kind of a fraud. And he's gonna get found out at some point. Actually, he did get found out, and the judges robbed us that Jared bet. So it's similar here. Austin Hubbard, is not as good as Jared Gordon, but he's a serviceable veteran at this point. And I just think he's going to be a little better, a little quicker on the feet. I think he can stop the takedowns, and I think he gets a decision. Am I loving it for DraftKings? No, but he's cheaper. He's a dog I like to win. So I'm going to roster some, and not a great fight to target, but one where I'm picking the underdog. So I'm going to have some exposure.
There you go. I'm with you. I think Hubbard is a solid risk. I don't see a lot of DraftKings scoring coming out of this fight on either side. Both these guys are tough. Austin Hubbard's a gamer. He's in there. He's not super gifted, but he's a gamer. And I don't think Figlak is going to get him out of there early. I agree with the odds makers that this has a higher chance of going to decision. I just don't see a 90 plus pointer out of either of these guys. So not a fight I'm going to be very heavily targeting on DraftKings. Now, on the flip side, this next fight is really interesting for me on DraftKings. This is Victor Henry taking on Ronnie Yahya. Henry's coming in a massive minus 370 favorite. Yahya plus 295. Inside the distance prop here is a uninspiring minus 125 to go to decision outside the distance. forgot about that. Bringing it back. I don't know. Henry, not super likely to get a finish. They're really kind of predicting him to win this fight via decision. You know, you give me three rounds in there with Yahya. What if he jumps on your back in round two and just chokes you out? Yahya's a dangerous grappler. So, Monk, how do you see this one going down?
Yahya is a dangerous grappler, and there's a couple of stats that kind of make me a little hesitant when it comes to rostering Victor Henry as the most expensive fighter on the card at 9,500. I mean, we've seen numbers like five strikes a minute almost against Basharat, 10.2 against Gravely. Sun Tzu not great at 4, but that was his lone loss, and then 12 strikes a minute in his debut against Hioni Barcelos. Hani Yahya, you know, he might be 39 years old, and that said, Victor Henry is going to be 37 on May 4th of this year. So it's not like, I mean, Yahya looks older. Henry looks pretty good, especially that, you know, full head of hair, but still 37 years old compared to 39. Yahya is allowing 2.4, 2.8, 0.37, 3.8, and 3.6 strikes per minute in his last five fights against guys like Montel Jackson, against guys like Ricky Simone. So he's really going to slow Victor Henry's game down. That said, I think Henry probably wins. But if it is by decision, what's this going to look like? Because if he's on top, it's going to be a whole lot of nothing. There's not going to be much ground and pound. Yahya's going to just lock you up and look for that submission. So Henry's going to look to keep this on the feet. But like I said, Yahya's game does not allow normally 10 strikes a minute, which is how Henry is putting up 106 in decisions, 113 against Barcelos in a decision. So I just don't see that repeating here at 9,500. I think it's a little too risky, and I think Henry will win, but likely by decision, and Yahya has ways of shutting the scoring down.
All right, I got to buck back at you a little bit here, Monk. It's the first time in a while, but you got to look at those fights a little bit closer, in my opinion. Montel Jackson knocked him out in the first round. That's why there was no significant strikes.
Mm-hmm.
Ricky Simone knocked him down twice and then was on top and then took him down four times and didn't get submitted. So there's no significant strikes there, but he knocked him down twice with what he did hit him and then was laying on top of him. Same thing with, you know, it's to me, this is Victor Henry stops the takedowns. He's going to knock out, Hani Yahya. Hani Yahya finishes guys like Russell Doane, Luke Sanders, you know, via submission. And it's a pretty, to me, it's a pretty binary fight. The only time that Hani Yahya went to a decision was the draw against Enrique Barzola, which is wild, and Joe Soto. More grapplers. They're not giving him a grappler here. Victor Henry's got 78% takedown defense in the UFC. I do know that Rafael Sun Tzu got him twice, but with a Sun Tzu, I think you're more worried about the strike. Like Hani Yahya is just, I love Hani Yahya. He used to be one of my favorite fighters, like in this weight class. It's one of those situations where it's the time of the specialist is really running out. You need to be able to do everything, or at least, you know, and Hani Yahya, when he can't get a takedown, he lays on his ground. He does Imanari rolls. He lays on his back and begs you to come down there. Like, I just think he's in trouble if he can't get a takedown. And I think it's at the point in his career with these new young guys, I don't think he can take them down. I like this fight for DraftKings because I think it's pretty binary in that Victor Henry gets a first or second round finish, or Hani Yahya does get on top. And I do think if Hani Yahya gets on top, I think he will submit Victor Henry.
There but you have it.
I'm on the Henry side.
Yeah, you just nailed it. Listen, I don't know if Yahya can get a takedown or not, but I do know he's going to try. And if he's successful, he's going to probably win this fight. This is a guy that it reminds me of Damian Maya. Like, he has a similar style. When he's on you, you cannot get him off. So, like, I love Yahya. He's come through for me as an underdog before. But you're right. He's older now. The chin probably not what it used to be. The striking, never that great, and not the worst. He's not like complete trash bag out there, but he's not Ben. Who was that wrestler that came into the UFC for a minute, got kneed to death by Masvidal, and then slinked away forever, right? He's not that dude.
That's a whole other podcast. Ben Askren's best years were spent in one.
Well, whatever it was, you know, it's not like that dude, right? Like, Yaya can actually stand in there and strike a little bit, but he's going to get outstruck by Henry if it's standing. I'm taking a shot at Yaya by submission. You can get, listen, do I think it's going to happen? No. But Yaya wins by submission plus 600 is an attractive line for this fighter because that's how he wins the fight. And I could see it happening. So I'm going to take a shot at a plus 600. And because I'm going to do that, I'm going to take a couple of stabs at him on DraftKings as well. Because if he wins, it's by submission and it will score well. That's simple. I actually think Henry will score pretty well if he wins. Also because Yaya's old and if he can't get the takedown, I'm not sure that he's going to be able to stand in there and take a high volume beating for multiple rounds. So that's my thoughts on that one.
With him at 9,500, would you rather have Petrovic, who could get a round one win, Ketlin Souza, who could score 100 and some points in a decision? That's where you got to make the decisions, because Henry's also probably going to be the highest owned fighter up there, in my opinion.
I don't know that he'll be the highest owned. I'm curious to see what the ownership.
Oh, everybody's like, Hani Yaya's 41. He's not gonna, or however old. Everybody's off.
Don't we think the same thing about like Ketlin Souza and that chick she's fighting, who's just absolutely terrible? But Ketlin Souza not that good
chick.
Either.
Don't even know her name. That chick.
I don't remember her name. Man, Marnik.
I don't think anybody remembers her name. Is the point.
I don't need to memorize the name. We're never going to see that fighter again in the UFC. Like, this is it.
Oh, she's got at least two more fights.
Not in the UFC.
Yeah. Nalian's 0-3, bud. Daniel Lacerda's 0-5. We're handing out fights here. You want to make 6K? Come over here and fight for Uncle Dana.
Just don't bite anybody.
Yeah. There it is. All right, guys. Next up, we've got the Dirty Bird. Tim Means taking on Uros Medish. With Medish coming in at minus 290 and the Dirty Bird come back at plus 245. Fight ends inside the distance, minus 240. And that makes sense because Medish is a finisher. Monk, he's probably a pretty good DraftKings score as well, no?
He put up 121 against Alon Cruz, 108 against Omar Morales, only 90 against Semelsberger, but he was getting his ass beat for like the first 7 minutes of that fight. So he does okay against guys he should do okay with, dude. Tim Means, on the other hand, I mean, he might be 2-3 in his last five. He might be 40 years old, but this dude is tough as hell. I don't need to tell you that. Looked good. I mean, comeback against just an awful fighter in Andre Fiallo. I was so happy to witness that. One against Nicholas Dalby, who's proving very, if you're Brazilian, you're not beating Nicholas Dalby, it seems like. So Tim Means might have just kind of gone under the radar there. You alluded to it, Uros Medish being a finisher. He's not once been to a decision in any of his 11 fights. Tim Means, 25 of his 33 wins are finishes, and let's see, 9 of his 15 losses also finishes. So I think the odds makers are right here. I love this fight for DraftKings. I do think it's a little wide, which means I'm interested in not only Medic, but also Tim Means at just 7,100. I mean, I'm never counting out Tim Means in any fight, especially against a guy who, again, loves to get his ass beat for like 7 to 8 minutes. Like, I love this fight for DraftKings, both sides. But I'm looking to be higher on Means, hopefully, than the field. Just a little bit, but... Man, I'm rooting for Tim Means, but yes, I think the winner finds a finish and hopefully lands optimally.
See, Monk, I just had to disagree with you, and now I can say I could not agree with you more.
There we go.
And this is one I wrote this in my notes, and I'm going to stand by this. And it's worse on the pot. If you are just looking at someone's mine in particular, I think anybody DFS Army, reading picks is not enough. Read the fucking notes, because people are like,
let me
every coach picked Uros Medic and Tim Means won. What the fuck? Well, did you read the part where I said, hey, this line is too wide. I am really close to picking Tim Means. The only reason I'm not is because he's 40 plus years old and he's got more scoring potential. This is a great fight to target both sides of. Do not let Tim Means beat you. He's my preferred GPP play because of the price. But you picked him to win. Yeah, because if I was lying the fight, like I'm close to betting Tim Means. If the age is really holding me back, I'm trying to be a little more conservative with my bets. But I do think this line is just too fucking wide. Mm-hmm. So reading who you pick to win, that's probably why you're losing at DraftKings.
Just a lot of work goes into writing up those notes, guys. So read them. I will speak to that for notes that I do as well. You put a lot of thought into it. You really kind of explore a lot of different angles with your notes. You want to put your heart on screen or on paper, so to speak. And then you just look at the pick and you don't.
I always look at snipers and I'm like, this is the week I'm going to write two. His are always so they're nice and succinct and to the point, but they're readable. They're like this mine. I'm like, all right, I'm going to do that. I'm going to get three just hard hitting sentences, get my point across. Next thing you know, it's 3 hours. My things are this long and I'm on five fights. I'm like, shit. Yeah.
I mean, I've been doing this a long ass time. I'd write I think I'm at a good medium now. There were times I wrote one sentence for each. Not enough. There are times I'd write big paragraphs and people are like, I'm not reading that. And I'm like, all right, I got to find a happy medium. I think I'm there now. What I really love, and this is just a quick aside for anybody who's touted anything. I love when people are like, you were wrong. You fucking suck. Get that all the time. I get it. Part of the territory. Do you think I didn't lose money too? I'm playing what I told you. I fucking lost tonight. It happens. Like, shit.
I'm looking for that guru who's always right. Who's that guru?
He's not an MMA guru. James Krause. Sorry, he's not allowed to.
You see, he posted something and deleted it.
I read what he posted. By the way, it's just like a real estate investment scam.
One scam, it's so trolly. Holy shit!
People are like, it's so bad.
I don't know what's up with that dude. Train fighters. What now? You got to be a real estate guru. All right, forget that. Let's move on. Did I get my take on that? I'm picking Medich to win. Dirty Bird, as much as I love him, you're nervous the whole time he's in there. He's getting hit. He just gets hit a lot. And it's scary to watch him. Your ass is puckered. He is that guy. I remember betting him against Mike Perry and just being so confident going in. And then, like, he's almost losing that fight. Multiple times, like, what is happening here?
Tim, the ass puckerer.
Yeah, he will make your ass pucker if you bet on him, especially as a favorite. As an underdog, I love it. But you lay minus 200, minus 250 on Tim Means.
That's rough.
Next up, I like this fight. Jonathan Fierce Pierce taking on David Barack Onama.
It's a great fight. I'm
making my own nicknames for these guys. I don't need their nicknames. I make my own up. Pierce is minus 150 with the comeback on Onama plus 130. Love this fight. Fight ends inside the distance minus 200. Monk, you're nodding your head. Do you appreciate the scoring potential of these two gentlemen?
I really do. Actually, Jonathan Pierce is the highest scorer per win on the entire card, and it's really not too close, especially if you take Janata Deniz's DWCS win right out of there. He's 8-9 points higher than the next closest guy, who's Mahashate. It's all these one fight guys. He's very consistent in scoring very well outside of this Joe Anderson Brito fight where, I mean, my God, he tells the guy to do something and then immediately gets ninja choked is one of the funnier things I've seen in a long time. But outside of that, I mean, he's putting up, 95 against C-Rod, who stifles everybody, is a pretty damn good score. It's his lowest score. 123, 145, and 104. Not against the best competition. And David Onama is super tough, but I love JS. This could be a rinse and repeat takedown type of affair. I mean, the over-under on Prize Picks, I think, is 3. I think we're looking at 5 to 6 to 7. Like I said, Onama is super tough. He gave up 2 to Santos, 3 to Nate the Train, and 8 takedowns to Mason Jones. Yes, that's a lot of takedowns, but it also tells you that he gets back up. And that's what we as DFS guys love to see when we're fighting a mat return wrestler type in JSP. So I'm loving to back that side. At the same time, I want shares of David Onama. because Pierce has been, you know, he has made mistakes as we've seen. And Onama, like I've said at least four times now, is super tough. So love this fight for DraftKings. I'm siding with JSP for the gigantic upside, but don't sleep on David Onama.
I'm leaving Petrovic and Liang out of what I'm about to say because I still can't decide how I want to approach that fight. My favorite three fights to tackle on to play on the card. Main event, we'll talk about later. The fight we just talked about, Medich Means. Mm-hmm. Number three, this one right here, JSP and David Onama. And again, I've said the word binary a few times in this podcast. I'm going to say it again. Super binary fight. Onama stop a takedown?
You can't tell if these are men or women in this fight?
No. Non-binary.
What?
You said binary, not non-binary.
Oh, I don't know. Buzzwords.
Either JSP is going to do what Monk said, or JSP's head is going to end up in the third row when Onama when Onama stops a takedown for once and knocks his head into the third row. You're making me make a pick. I have to go with the favorite in JSP because until I see Onama stop a takedown, I can't assume he's going to do it. So that's the pick, but love this fight.
Yeah, I'm going to buck the trend here. I like Onama here. Pierce takes him down. He gets back up. He knocks him out. I love to get enamored by these wrestlers and these takedown artists, and I love it, which is why I'm going to be all in on this fight. If he's able to execute that the whole fight, wonderful. We're going to get 6, 7, 8, 9 takedowns, and he will give us a Ricky Simone-style massive score. But Onama's a bad man, and he is a better striker, and he will knock this guy out when it's standing. So I love it. I'm going to be pretty close to all in on this fight. And again, what you said before, Monk, when Pierce is winning, he's scoring like a maniac, right? Mm-hmm. But I think Onama can knock this guy out. And he's not that expensive. 7,600, it's a mid-level number, but it's just low enough that even a 90-ish point second round finish type deal after having been grappled around a bit in round one, I think we could still probably get there. I don't know that we're going to get there if it's a flash third round KO, but if he can get it done in the first two rounds, yes. I'm talking myself out of all in though. I think if Onama wins, it's less likely to score massive than Pierce. I'm talking myself out of it a little bit, but I will have heavy exposure to this one. And I'm actually going to pick the underdog here, Onama, to get the upset and get a W. I just think he's tougher than Pierce, and I think he's a better striker. He is a clear advantage. And what if he can stop the takedown? By the way, I think Onama used to train with the aforementioned, what's his name, Kraus.
Yeah, he did.
Was that why we mentioned it? Because I think he used to
be in that camp. We mentioned it because something about you said something about a guru picks all the bets.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, randomly, I think Onama used to train under that guy, and now
Ori MMA.
Yeah, I don't know where he is now, but it's not with Kraus.
Says that's
Factory
lame.
X, maybe.
Never mind. Still says on Tapology, it still says Glory MMA. So
I think he might be at Factory X or something better.
Hopefully.
All right, moving on. We're getting towards the main event here, guys, but we have one more super turd to get through. And this is a fight between Austin Lane and Jonata Denise. Now, if you think that name is annoying, and it is, I think this fight is going to replicate the annoyance of that name. But Denise is minus 284 as the favorite, Austin Lane. And Austin Lane was just getting finished by one of the Taffa brothers.
Justin.
Ugh, gross.
Twice.
Under 1.5 rounds, minus 265. So, Sniper, you said earlier that those other three fights are your favorite. But we've got a minus 265 to go under 1.5 rounds situation. A Bruin here with Jonata Denise.
I can justify that because I said fights. I only like one fighter from this fight.
Okay, there we go.
Like, no thank you on Austin Lane. Dude is cat shit wrapped in dog shit, covered in bat shit. No thank you. Denise, high-level glory kickboxer. Austin Lane just got finished by a probably more powerful, but not nearly as technical striker in one of the Tafas. Like, Denise is going to knock him the fuck out. Like, I'm having a hard time. Did I make Denise a core play? If I didn't, I was damn close to it.
What's the price point on Denise?
9,000. Probably the one reason why I didn't.
Monk, this guy could get it done better than all those other ones if he can get it done within 60 seconds.
That's the thing. 60 seconds, and that's what we're looking at here. I mean, Tafa, I mean, if you're going to tell me Tafa knock this dude out in a minute 37, and Sniper's telling me that Denise, obviously, and I'm not arguing with Sniper about this, is more athletic, more technical, and probably quicker, then that tells me he can land more volume in that time and land that one shot on the terrible, no good, very bad Austin Lane. So, yeah.
Denise was a winning glory kickboxer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, most of the time I see guys, when I see you're 6-0, you have 6 pro fights, and the other guy has like 16. I generally like to see octagon time when I say this, but I generally think that the guy that's 6-0 really doesn't perform as well most of the time. But in this case, when we're talking about a guy that's a glory kickboxer, this is a Pereira type 6-0. This is like guy a couple weeks ago that fought Pereira. Good.
I'm not comparing him to
no, Pereira. No, I mean just
nobody lighting him on fire.
Yeah,
he's got plenty of losses, kickboxing losses as well. Yeah. But he does have wins.
He wasn't a world champion, but he was a good. Right. He won fights. He wasn't a trash can.
Yeah, there was another guy a couple weeks ago that the guy that beat Pereira once. He also had an extensive kickboxing record. Came in 6-0 and then demolished whoever he fought. I think it was the card before 300.
Held on to his legs and got his
Week. So that kind of gives me these kind of vibes. So that's a too long of a way to say I do think 9K is probably very worth it this week. I've been talked into it myself this whole week. So yeah, I mean, this is enticing. It's honestly, surprisingly, it's Deniz, it's Souza, and it's Petrovic are the most enticing ones almost at the 9K for the early super quick finishes. You know what I mean? It's a very strange card.
But everyone's complaining. Like, I like the Apex. I think that we should do both. Everyone's like, this card, fuck cards at the Apex. You want people to spend $1,000 to sit front row to this?
Right.
No, we'll just put it on the Apex, have some fun, mix it up. Like,
yeah, small cage.
Yeah, the Apex does lead to a lot more finishes. That smaller cage leads to more finishes. You can't hide in that cage. So I like it. Denise, we've effectively, how do we put this? We fleshed out that there's a lot of good 9K type fighters on this card. All of them have compelling arguments for monster scores, all the way from Ketlin, and all of the ones that we've discussed so far that we've kind of put in this category, they all have a great shot at a really, really good score. So the general approach being back to, some cards don't have this. Back to find some punts so you could fit the studs at 9K. There are cards that where it's like, I don't want to spend on these 9K guys, or we've had a lot of those cards recently, especially a few weeks ago. So we're back to it. We're back to let's afford the studs by picking the one or two turds that or underdogs, so to speak, that do come through for us. So I'm with you guys, but I don't think Austin Lane will be in my mix at all this week. If he was a grappler and could like threaten, hey, Denise hasn't seen this skill set, maybe I'd have it, but you saw what happened even to Jamal Hill going up against the much superior striker. If you don't have grappling to fall back on and you're against one of these glory guys, you're probably not in the best of shape.
No.
Here's a close one. Karini Silva taking on Ariane Lipski. Karini is -150. Ariane, +130. Let's see. Are we inside or outside of the distance on this one, Monk?
I want to say inside.
Yeah, inside the distance, -180.
Queen of Violence is back.
All right. Monk, I don't know. Karini, Ariane, is there any reason to be excited about either one of these ladies?
I mean, sure. I think there's reason to be excited about either one. I mean, Lipski has a little bit. I mean, it's hard to even call it a resurgence. She's won 4 of her last 5.
The resurgence. When she came to the UFC, everybody was hyped up on her, and she started shitting her pants.
Yeah, that's true. So
aggressively.
Yeah, I mean, she beats Mandy Baum, loses to Cachoeira, but then it's Aldrich Gatto, Casey O'Neill. To me, the most impressive win lately, 106. I know a lot of people were on O'Neill that week, and Lipsky put up a very good score with a second-round finish there. And Silva just looks like, I mean, who the hell's going to stop her is what she looks like, to be honest. The bigger the afro gets, the more powers that she gets. And also, guys, watch – I put this in my notes. Be sure to watch the weigh-ins tomorrow because – Silva and who someone I listened to this week put it so nicely like this. She's on all eating the very best acai that Brazil has to offer. If you catch my drift, she is going to look fantastic. She looks absolutely ripped. And tomorrow's going to be no exception. She has three UFC fights. She has made the optimal lineup in 1, 2, 3 UFC fights, all round one submissions. Lipsky's tough as hell, but Silva, I mean, her nickname is Killer, and that's exactly what she looks like, man. At 8,500, I have the potential at 5 points a minute and 108 when she wins. I'm going to have a hard time being talked out of that. The only thing I see is that Lipsky's never been subbed in her professional career, so that could come as a bit of a problem here. 100% takedown defense in her last five fights. And in her career, I believe it is 79. So that's my only question mark. Silva looks like a goddamn killer.
Cyber, yeah, do you think that I got to ask you about this. Lipsky has just horrific losses in her career. And then recently, she's got some great wins. Like, her losses are unforgivable. You can't lose to Montana De La Rosa, Antonina Shevchenko.
Cachoeira in 1 minute.
What? Right, like her losses are disastrous, but then
I still don't think I don't think Casey O'Neill was right though. That was O'Neill's first fight back from that pretty severe. I forget if it was knee or ACL.
ACL, like, yeah,
it was the ACL, right? She didn't look right. Now, granted, good for Lipsky, but
it's excuse making. You're making excuses.
No, I'm backing you up in that she loses these unforgivable losses, and her great win is against somebody who I think was compromised.
You might be right.
Is Karini Silva like a great bet here? Because this is what I'm... Lipsky, I had written her off. You lost to Priscilla Cachoeira. You're dead to me, right?
Yeah.
And then she runs off a 3-fight win streak. And you're like, wait a second. Was it all just jitters? What happens with this woman?
I think she changed camps.
So different.
I don't know if that's true. I think she changed camps around that catch a beating fight.
Did she?
Change camps after that loss.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I would hope so.
Maybe, yeah, because has she turned it around? I mean, that's the tough thing that I have a hard time with. Somebody like this who looks amazing one time, looks terrible another time. It's just a tough one. If we see the Ariani that beat Casey O'Neill, she's got a great shot of winning as an underdog here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a high inside the distance prop. I don't know what to do with this one.
Yeah, it's for me, I am on the Karini Silva side. Another good women's fight to target based on the numbers here. Like the salaries in this one. I like the output. I like the grappling. I like everything about this fight. It's not an all-in fight, but it's a fight I really like. Like I'd play either one of these women before I played anybody in the Austin Hubbard fight.
Marina Moroz was by far the best opponent Silva's fought thus far. And she landed finished her in basically 5 minutes, just under 6 strikes a minute, a knockdown, a takedown, and 17% control time. And she was controlled for 33% of that 5 minutes. And she still ended up with 120. Like, this woman, and it was against her toughest competition. It's just
Karini seems to get better every single fight. And that's the thing with her, where Ariane's all over the place. Karini just literally gets better. I actually faded that fight. And I faded her somewhat in that fight against Marina. And obviously that was a disaster.
$8,300.
Yeah, that was a disastrous decision on draft. That cost me that one. So what are you going to do, right? I didn't have much of her. Then I can't fade this. Let's see what the price point is on DraftKings. $8,500, $7,700. So yeah, that's a mid-salary fight. We're going to need a little bit of that one to feel good about ourselves. So there we go. All right. Co-main event? Yeah. I'll call it the co-main. I don't know what we're calling this one.
We're calling it the This is the three-peat fight, because we've already seen this twice, right?
Have we?
Yeah, Spann has fought Smith twice already.
Oh, we got Bogdan Guskov here.
Yeah, that's just Anthony Smith with his eyebrows shaved.
The Smith twin. I'm like,
I knew where you were going with it. I was just letting it happen.
Did I miss something?
I was just letting it happen. I knew it was coming.
Ryan Spann taking on Bogdan Guskov. Spann minus 190 in this one. Bogdan plus 170. Fight. Let's see here. Fight ends. In yes, baby. Fight ends inside the distance. Minus 1,000. Is this real? First of all, I'm about to bet goes the distance just because that's a fucked up number. But
that's right. Kind of my
what? Sniper, I'm not fighting that on the DraftKings card. Like, I'm accepting the minus 1,000 for DraftKings purposes. You have to. What are you, smarter than the minus 1,000?
No. And I still like those other fights. This is one of those. Everyone's going to play both sides of this, and I'm going to follow right along. Like, I'm not going to get cute here, but this is probably like, honestly, I mean, I'll go first this time. Like, I'm picking Guskov. I don't think he was ready for Volkan. I don't think Spann is that good. I've been down on him constantly. I think Guskov pulls it off. But if Spann wins, it's via KO. Like, both guys probably score well. I think we all, like, play this fight. So I'm probably just going to, in my head, I'm probably going to play in 45% Guskov, like 30-ish% Spann, and leave a little bit in case something funny happens. Or, you know, there's other huge scores where they're not on the optimal. Like, it's not, I don't know. This one seems like a really straightforward fight to break down for how I'm going to play it on DraftKings. Try and get. Definitely be over on Guskov, be field or a touch over on Spann, and leave myself a little wiggle room.
I think Guskov will be higher owned than Spann.
Yeah, so I might be just slightly over them both. I think you're right. I don't think it's a cute pick. Like, I don't want to. I'm picking Guskov. I don't think I can do it as a kill shot because I think it's going to be that chalky. I don't. Meh.
What do you think, Monk? this feels all in to me.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Tons of finishes in this fight historically. 18 out of 21 wins for Spann. 6 of his 9 losses, all finishes. Bogdan, all of his wins are by finish. He's only seen decision one time. Spann went to split with Smith before that in his last 5. It's 3 subs and a knockout. He's only beaten Dominic Reyes and Ian Kutalaba in his last 5. Big question marks there. If Sniper's right, and I agree, Guskov not ready for Volkan, and now he's getting settled. He's going to look better than ever, and Spann is unimpressive. So I like both sides here. Obviously interested in the 7,300 guy. I also picked him to win. I might be heavier on him than Spann, but, yeah, one of these guys should go to sleep. Minus 1,000 though. I mean, we've seen this before, guys, especially in the light heavyweight division, you know, and if Bogdan's a lot better than he was against Volkan, this fight could get slowed down and extended. Who knows? Still, I'm not going to outsmart myself. I will play both sides, just like Sniper said.
Yeah. I guess it's noteworthy that it's not like either one of these two gentlemen throws up a ton of volume. Right. This score and their massive score is fully based on the inside of distance prop and this expectation that one of these guys get knocked out in the first 8.5 or 7.5 minutes of the fight.
By the way, Guskov could lay on Spann for the first round, and Spann could knock him out seconds into the second round, and he score 82 points and not be enough.
Yep.
Yeah. Listen, stuff can happen. There are finishes. It doesn't have to be a lock button. But what I like about it is they're mid-salary guys. So, you know, if you're playing Guskov, 7,300, you're saving a lot of salary there. Ryan Spann is coming in below sort of that stud zone at 8,900. So you kind of have a little zone that you can work with here. I think a lot of this card, and I threw a lineup.
I like stud zone. That's got to be a thing.
I agree. When you said that, my ears perked up.
Yeah.
I like stud zone.
Should we have a segment about the stud zone on the show?
I love it, actually. Stud zone.
Yeah. I mean, like, look at, look at the card falls down, right? You start with Lontop. You pick an underdog. Right, you got Guskov and Onama, maybe Mowgli Benitez in that mix. You know, there's a few live, the Dirty Bird, if you like that. Ronnie Yaya could win. You know, you're going to pick one of those guys, maybe a second. You don't really even need two. If you play Karini Silva, you're just left with a lot of salary. You want to get one from the main event in there. Great. Throw Nicolau in there. 8,700, super cheap. So it's not that it's going to be tricky to get two, I'm going to call it 8,900 and above fighters in your lineup, but that's probably what's that?
What do we call 8,900 and above?
I'm lowering the stud zone from 9K to 8,900 on this one. Boom.
Yes. It's sticking.
And yeah, you know, we want two from the stud zone.
Stud zone.
And then the crud zone.
Oh, yes.
We all have experience with the friend zone.
Yeah.
Not too many of us have experience with the stud zone. I wish I was in the
not a lot.
Zone.
I mean, now that I make good money, my wife's like, yeah, cool.
Oh boy.
Eventually, we just have to hope for that.
Yeah, you got to make a lot of money to get in the stud zone. that's how it goes. All right.
Or be super funny. Thank God. Yeah. Thank God, you know, and thank God I was funny in college, or I would have never got laid.
You gotta have the riz, as the youngsters say.
That's true. They do say that.
Make them laugh. Make them laugh.
Gotta have the riz. Matias Nicolau in the main event taking on Alex Perez. Alex Perez, didn't he just get knocked the fuck out like 2 weeks ago? He's back in a hurry.
I mean, maybe, but he got decisioned by Makhachev in March.
All right. Well, I thought he fought very recently, but was that?
Yeah,
that was just like, wait. You're that acting was, like March was this long time ago. We're April. Yeah,
but he didn't get knocked out.
No, but he fought like yesterday. I mean, it was like three cards ago that he was fighting. It was so recent. I don't even understand how he's fighting again. But here we are. Main event.
Because everybody's favorite champ pick of 2024 can't seem to either figure out the scale or figure out his training camp. So he was supposed to fight Manel Cobb.
Yeah. Well, I guess
he can't figure anything out.
Manel Cobb is never going to be a UFC champion.
Dude, he can't even make it to a fight.
You know who I had picked as a future, and now I don't like it anymore, but I liked him at 205. Jailton Almeida, I thought could have been a 205 champ. But now that he's heavyweight, I think, I don't know.
He's going to go back down now that Curtis
Blades talking about.
Yeah. It got bad. It got ugly. All right. So anyway, Matias Nicolau, Alex Perez. Fight ends inside the distance. An uninspired minus 155, considering this is a five-round fight. But we do get five rounds of violence here.
The flyweights, too.
Monk, I cannot imagine that Nicolau is at the top of your list of points per minute studs in the UFC. Seems to be a more measured fighter, but we get five rounds of action. Is there enough time here to get it done?
You know, he's not somebody I would necessarily put in the stud zone, but 3.4 points a minute is pretty good. His defensive pace is also very good. He does his best work, much like Alex Perez. Inside the distance is where he seems to be putting up his best numbers. That said, I don't expect a ton of that from either of these guys. I do hope this goes to decision. I honestly, Perez, for being, you know, say what you want about him, three losses in a row, they're against very good fighters, Figueiredo, Pantoja, and Makhachev. And when he does win, he scores very, very well. Yeah, it's against guys like Jordan Espinoza, but some of the names are better than others. Nicolau doesn't have the best names either. I mean, he did beat Manel Kopp in a split decision. Elliot Dvorak and then Matt Schnell has most recently lost to Roy Val, KO'd in 2 minutes. But I hope this goes to decision. I think it is, and I think Sniper is going to echo me because I read his notes on this one. I think this is a stackable fight, and if you're building your lineup like you were a minute ago, I think if you started with Jantop, Nicolau, and Perez, there's a lot of different ways that you could go with that. I'm not saying I'm going to necessarily do that
in approach.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different ways you could go with that in cash. So I'm looking into that a little bit. I really do like some of the mid range and some of the guys in the stud zone per se. But I'm looking at Matias and Perez as a pretty good fight as long as it goes to decision. If it doesn't, then I'm just going to have to eat some score here, especially if I stack it.
There's no reason not to stack this in cash games. There's just not. There's a lot of high volatility fights.
Mm-hmm.
This one's five rounds, flyweights. They're active enough. Nicolau can grapple. Frankly, I think what I'm struggling with the most is figuring out how Nicolau is going to decide he wants to win this fight. Like, I think he's better everywhere. I think he can win on the feet. I think he can take down Perez if he wants to. The only question mark I have about Nicolau, and anybody should have, is the chin going to hold up? You've seen him get rocked before. Perez can hit, but Perez has just looked terrible ever since he got the shot against Pantoja. I think that was too much too soon. I think it's a prospect. And we've seen the UFC ruin plenty of prospects. I think he's been ruined. I think we're going to see him in PFL in a year or two. I think Nicolau runs through him here. It's a matter of how much to play. 8,700, main event, 5 rounds. I'm going to be much higher on Nicolau, but it is a good fight to target and definitely stack it up in cash.
So my only thought on this one is I don't necessarily think this has to be a 100% all-in exposure 5-rounder. Perez has pretty good takedown defense, and he might not get taken down. And so we might see 5 rounds of striking. Nicolau is not a 7-8 strikes per minute guy. And at let's just assume it goes the distance as the odds makers say, and that Nicolau wins a striking based decision. He lands 5 rounds per minute over the course of 25 minutes. That's 125 strikes landed. That is not enough scoring for 8,700 to produce a 100 plus point score. So this goes to decision. It's fine. They land 25, 30 strikes per round, you know, above average. And it still doesn't do enough to matter, right? You need almost 200 strikes landed in a decision to score 110 points. So, or some other things to happen along the way. Now he can get a takedown. There are other ways. My main point is, Perez is live. Like, he could win. People are not giving him credit. He's not going to get taken down. Nicolau is a nasty grappler. I don't think that's how it's going to go down. So I think Perez is live to actually win. I thought Perez looked good against Makhachev in terms of like hanging in there for 3 rounds and not wilting away. So I would say Nicolau is less good. Actually, I'm not sure. Do you think if Nicolau was going up against Makhachev right now, who'd be favored?
Makhachev, but I'd bet Nicolau.
Yeah, the line would be fucked for Makhachev.
It'd be we'd all be betting Nicolau, though, right? Yeah. Like, I think we'd all be like, I'm kind of interested in Nicolau. We all kind of think that Makhachev might be a little fraudulent. So, yeah, whatever.
I wouldn't use that word personally, but
he has
questions to answer.
A little, maybe the hype isn't justified as maybe. Anyway.
Yeah,
Nicolau, but I think Nicolau wins this fight, but I don't definitely know that it's going to score massive if it goes to decision. So it's not an all-in fight for me. I'd much rather have some of these other fights that we discussed. Like, if I had to lock button fights, it's probably not this one. I'll have a lot of exposure to these guys. I love the price points. I love the 5 rounds, but and I agree that both these guys are great cash plays, and we want to stack that in cash. All right, kill shot time. This is the kill shot, where we talk about our favorite underdog to come through, deliver the win, and help us win the tournament this week. Kill shots have been fire on the show for those that watch it. I bet pretty much all the kill shots I put out, and that's been really good too. So
Nate the Train, I'm still high on that one.
I don't know what I had last week, but I had Breschke the week before, so I'm riding high on Breschke, even though that was a terrible win.
Yeah, well, a win is a win.
That's right.
So, my kill shot. All right, let's go around, actually, since I know you guys aren't on the same guy as I am. Monk, start us off. Who's your kill shot for this card? Give me an underdog that will help me win the tournament this week.
Well, as Sniper said, I love Guskov, but I think he's going to be too high-owned, so I'm not going to...
I think it's a fair kill shot. Allow it. But if you want to go alternate, you can.
Yeah, I'll go alternate. And there's not a ton of guys that I really like at the 77 or below. For DraftKings, but I'm going to go with Mowgli, Gabriel Benitez.
Yeah,
because I don't trust Mahashate. So yeah, I'm going to go with Benitez. I think out of the names like Padilla, Mann, Lane, I mean. Yep. Even Perez, I think he's got a decent shot.
Didn't say it. I'm gonna echo what I said earlier. I may be picking Euros Medic to win the fight.
Nice.
Tim Means is the guy who can win me a DraftKings tournament. Give me the Dirty Bird as a kill shot.
I like it. I love the Dirty Bird as a kill shot. I've got a couple that I like as well, but I'm going with David Onama to get the upset on Jonathan Pierce. Everybody wants to play Pierce. He's awesome when he wins. I will be playing some Pierce as well, but I'm going to have a shit ton of Onama in case he can get back up and knock him out. All right. That'll do it for this one. Guys, remember that we're breaking down these fights. We're talking the fights in the DFS Army Discord all throughout the week. Super sharp players there. A lot of the guys you see commenting on these podcasts, they are in there. We have notes. We've got the Domination Station Optimizer. We've got ownership projections. We've got fighter projections. Everything you want to dominate MMA in DFS Army, amongst other things. You got Sniper dropping prize picks and sleeper picks and all these great stuff.
I'll have more UFC picks again. The UFC. Did you see what I posted everywhere? So I posted a 6-man, and it went 5 for 6. So we doubled up. But the 2-man I posted everywhere was what to pair with your promo. The play I was highest on for UFC 300 was Bobby Green over on significant strikes, and he hit like 182. I was like, think I cashed that one. Yeah, that was close. That.
He got there in the first round.
Yeah, that'll do.
He did a whole
that was great.
He did a whole like 3 rounds worth of striking in round one. So
that was crazy.
There we go. That'll do it. And you're dropping fire on Prize Picks and Sleeper throughout the day. So and Underdog. So we've got all that going on. Everything else we've got going on at DFS Army, make sure to check it out. Hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you can be notified when these videos come out. Good luck this week, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Later, guys.